You're listening to the Outpost Podcast with Dr. Ray Mitch. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the next edition of the Outpost Podcast. I'm Dr. Ray Mitch, your host. Thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate the value of the time you spend listening in to our journey, our discussion about the spiritual journey, and that's what we're talking about. The title for today is called Journey to the Center of Your Soul, because we just finished talking about the wall experience and what really quite key role it plays. But before I get into that, let me describe for you, if you're new here and you are just coming on board to find out what this thing is all about and what I have to say, or if I have anything worth listening to, is you know, what we're trying to do here is create some kind of discussion around the intersection of faith, psychology, and spiritual formation. And that's, again, as I've said often before, is that that's not a usual conversation. Usually we'll have a conversation about faith, or we'll have one about, and sometimes you'll sprinkle in some spiritual formation. But faith and psychology are entirely separate. So the whole idea of bringing these two things together is relatively foreign. Now, in the world that I live in and our the psych program that we have at CCU, these are thoroughly interconnected. They're I wouldn't say integrated. They are the same, at least in the way that we are approaching it. So what I'm trying to do here is to create a space where doubters, wounded, confused, beat up and beat down, the bent and bruised who feel like their lives are a disappointment to God, actually find some measure of validation for what they're experiencing enough to feel known. And obviously, I think when we feel known, we oftentimes are that much more willing to know others. And that's what I have seen. I've seen it consistently in all the groups that I've done over the years at CCU. But we want to be a place where people can bump into the biblical Jesus and not the one that they have been told about or that they have created in their own minds or anything like that. So pull up a chair, get comfortable, relax. If you're driving, don't take your hands off the wheel. Listen in. But I want to talk about the issues that really matter and what we have been talking about. And this is a lengthy series, I think it would be safe to call it, is built on the material from that is in contained in the book, The Critical Journey, Stages in the Life of Faith, Janet Hagberg, Robert Gulick. And I'm taking that book as kind of the launch pad for some of the things that we're talking about here. And I have my own observations about that. So I'm using that as kind of the structure from which I launch. And then I have my own observations to make around that that hopefully is helpful to you. One of the things that I've been saying consistently since I've started this series that there are two key principles that we're operating from. One is you can't move anywhere if you don't know where you are. And ultimately, my effort in spending all of this time looking at and describing for you a little bit what this spiritual journey is like is to help you figure that out. And there's no implicit, this is where you should be. You will never hear that on this podcast. It's a matter of let's just be clear about where we are, because once I have that in mind, then I have a little bit of an idea of where I need to go. So that's one basic principle. The second one is you can't lead somebody someplace you've never been. And we have already looked at stage one, which is the converted life and being taught and carried along by other people, the the disciple life, where I kind of ride on the coattails of other people's faith and learn and grow in my own faith. And then stage three is the productive life, where I start to make my own contributions and put my faith into action. And all of those are necessary components. And what we finished with last week was talking about the wall and how the wall is kind of an interstage experience. It's not stage three, and it's not entirely stage four, although it probably overlaps more fully with stage four. But the wall is one of these places that throws us into a considerable level of disorientation and uncertainty, and we honestly don't like it. And a lot of times we go scurrying back to stage three. And the other thing I'll just mention is that I quite honestly, I hate the language of stages, because it tempts us into thinking linearly, and that's not really what this is about. Now, I'm using that language just for convenience sake, not for instructive sake. And so the wall is no stage. It oftentimes comes at a particular time when we begin to despair about the productive life is not necessarily bringing us to the level of depth that we desire. And then we experience a life crisis or a trauma of some sort or anything like that. And it throws us into this disorientation, and we start to look at things differently, and we experience life differently, and ultimately we experience God differently. And so it is this massive reorientation, and we begin to realize that everything that I did before, the way that I did it before in terms of my relationship with God, it was misguided. I wouldn't say it's wrong, but it was misguided, and it really isn't leading me to the depth that I want it to. And so in a lot of cases, people will come through, and myself included, will come through this wall experience and say, what do I do next? I mean, how do I move into a deeper relationship with God rather than doing something for God? Okay. And so at this point in time, our journey has had, up to this point in time, our journey has had certain external dimensions to it. Our life of faith has been visible and outwardly oriented. Like, what can I do to help? What can I do to contribute? Even though things certainly are happening inside of us that we're not real sure. So we just keep charging on, keep doing the things that we know to do, thinking that that is what God wants us to do. And then something happens and it all starts crumbling, and we're wondering what's going on here. And so the stage that we enter in is called the journey inward, and that's why I call it journey to the center of your soul. If you're familiar with the old movie, actually there was a new remake called The Journey to the Center of the Earth. Well, this is very similar. Except now that it's into the depths of our own soul, and it ultimately what comes out comes during this time, which is even more disconcerting than the wall itself, is a mode of questioning and exploring and falling apart and doubting and dancing around the real issues and sinking into uncertainty. And to some degree, indulging in a certain level of self-centeredness. And for a lot of people, I think, around us that see us in this stage of our spiritual development, they see us as looking pretty hopeless. It's like, they'll never come out of this. This is not going to work. And or being very irritated and frustrated with us because we seem to be so self-absorbed. And so it's during this stage that we begin to dig downward. Up until this time, we have been very horizontal people, and horizontal in terms of service, in terms of my relationship with God, everything like that. But now we start to dig deeper, and that's why it's called the journey inward. And it ultimately it becomes painfully clear that after the initial squirming in another attempt to get comfortable, which is even happens in the wall, that the right direction rather than the right answers have to come from God. And it's about direction, not answers. And that's what's so hard. Because in stage three, we have answers. It's like, do this more, do this in this way, do this harder. And that's the key is if then therefore, if I do this, then God will bless me. Therefore, I will be helpful. I will be useful. I will be blessed even. I've had some people certainly say that. So we keep applying all the rules of engagement from stage three onto the wall. And it doesn't work, never works, because it's kind of a maelstrom, if you're familiar with that old word. It's like this huge, massive storm and vortex that I've entered into, and all the usual strategies I use don't work. And so that's where we are. We begin to realize that it's not a matter of having all the right answers. It is a matter of being clear about what direction I need to take. And God is the only one ultimately that can really reveal that to us. So many of those that we look to naturally to help us are oftentimes very inadequate guides for this journey, like pastors and counselors and other people like that, because they haven't experienced it either. Remember the first principle I talked about. You can't lead somebody someplace you've never been. Well, ultimately, there are lots of people, I think, that we oftentimes are surrounded by that think that they know where they're going, but they've never visited there. They've never experienced this inward journey. They have always been focused on the outward part of this and the horizontal part of this, and they think really that's all there is. You just keep going and keep on keeping on in that way, and everything will be fine. And the reality is we can get pretty comfortable doing things that way, but usually something happens, and I've seen this happen so many times, not only in my own life, but in the people that I have talked to over the years, is that something upsets the apple cart, as the old phrase goes. And suddenly they're saying, wow, how I thought this worked doesn't work anymore. What do I do? And so they look to people who have never done this journey before. They think they have. Oftentimes, they're very well-meaning. I'm not going to sit here and say that they're somehow evil for doing this, but oftentimes we think that we've done something that we really haven't done yet, and we want to be helpful, so we kind of fly by the seat of our pants saying what we have to say, but we've never been there before. And the other person, because of the condition they're in, it never really occurs to them to say, have you ever done this journey yourself? And that's what's key. I think in some respects, what I have seen, at least, is that when you bump into somebody who's done the spiritual, the inward journey, it's very clear who they are, versus the people that are more doing more and better and longer and deeper and all the other things that go along with that. And so those who have been through this are usually intuitively, maybe not specifically, but intuitively trained and sensitive to spiritual direction and spiritual formation, which is one of the reasons why I want to do this podcast, so that people understand that spiritual formation isn't something only a pastor does. It is really very much a part of our development, and we have to have an understanding of what this landscape looks like if we're even going to traverse it at all. And so people that have done this before are pretty unique people, and they are to be sought out as mentors. What I have found, at least in the university setting, is that that's pretty easy to do in the 18 to 22-year-olds that are part of the university experience. Having a mentor is known it is valued depending on where you've gone to school, and it's invaluable in a lot of cases. And if that's the way you go, then that's the first thing you think of. It's not necessarily a counselor. It's somebody who has gone down the road farther than us and is willing to come back and talk about life and living and all the things that I talk about in my other podcast. If you're interested, it's called Unscripted. But I'm not going to do a shameless plug at this point. So there's that. And that's what this stage four, if you will, is this journey to the center of your soul. It is not for the faint-hearted. Because we will find things there that are very disconcerting. And oftentimes we know that they're there. We have just never taken the time to look. So there are some key characteristics that I want to describe for you. And one of the things that brings us to this point is we realize that our faith doesn't seem to work like it used to. And so we can feel very remote and immobilized and unsuccessful in the spiritual journey, hurt, and the dramatic word would be reprehensible. It's like, I'm unredeemable here because of how broken I am, how much I see this stuff, and I can't really come back from it. And it's a level of despair that most people cannot tolerate. Either they don't sit in it long enough to explore the topography of their despair because they're so afraid of it that it will just gobble them up and they'll never be able to come out again. And so what they do is they go scurrying back to other stages. So, and that's one of these characteristics. That's why the inward journey is something that so many people do not engage in. And it doesn't mean just counseling. Now, counseling can be very much a part of it. And you can find counselors that are spiritually sensitive to direction and formation. Absolutely, you can find people like that. It's not often. Just because they're Christians doesn't make them an expert on spiritual formation or direction. And in a lot of cases, in other settings, you will find somebody who's a spiritual director in a retreat center, but you're not necessarily going to find them as a counselor, which I think is tragic, if you ask me. That is a massive opportunity for a counselor who wants to walk alongside people in their spiritual journey, having no idea what this is about, because they always look at it as a psychological issue and forget about the spiritual component to it. And that's a larger issue that's going on even today. Is are we talking about the spiritual realm, or are we talking about the brain-body realm, the psychology of all of that? And I think, quite honestly, the answer is yes, it's both. But we go to what we're familiar and comfortable with. We don't go to what probably needs to be addressed. And that's very much a part of this. So the journey from the initial stage to stage three usually follows a fairly straightforward, smooth course that is very predictable, very clear, makes sense. It fulfills our wishes. It ultimately will change our circumstances, and sometimes we'll solve some of our problems. We have clear principles to follow, and we can follow them, and they can have a very positive impact on our relationships and our relationship with God and everything else. So, I don't want you to think that I'm saying the journey inward is the thing that you need to be doing. The key, like I said before, when we even started this series, you're climbing a mountain, but you're not climbing it straight up. You're climbing it in progressive spirals. And so with each one, you're going to hit something along the way, all the way up. And that's the place where when we hit it, at this point in our development, is we have a choice to make, either to go back to being productive or to say, time out, I need to look deeper as to what's going on in my soul that is creating this dissonance, this unsettledness, the restlessness that I feel. And one of the things that we find in the first three stages is we're building up a process of relationship to God that's built on if-then statements. If I do this, then God will do that. And if-then, if-then, if-then. And it's very predictable. And the reality is, unfortunately, that over time, we make God more predictable that way, rather than the Holy Spirit being very unpredictable and very, you know, uncontrollable even. And that's not comforting. That really isn't comforting. I think we underestimate just how much we would love to have God be controllable. Now, we can say what we know, right? God is omniscient, omnipotent, all of those sorts of things. He can do anything he wants, but there's also an implicit but in there that says, but if I do the right things, then God will do the right things by me. And so it's a contract relationship. And suddenly that stops working and things don't happen the way we thought. I can tell you that I have experienced this. And I the reason I talk about this with as much passion that I do is that this is exactly what my journey was like. I thought that the entire spiritual life was contained in the productive contribution to ministry and to the church and everything else. And quite honestly, God didn't have a say in what I was going to do. I was going to do it for him. All I needed him to do is to say, well done, my good and faithful servant, rather than me saying, God, what do you want me to do? And how are you going to use me? And how can I participate with you in this thing rather than tell you how it should go? So up until stage three, it's very predictable. I know what I need to do. Usually what we emphasize is obedience and the spiritual disciplines like a quiet time and prayer time and all those kinds of things. And then we get here and it's like, wait a minute, those are not helping. That's kind of what it feels like. And we feel very sheepish about it because we feel like, ooh, I don't know that I don't want to admit that, but that's really the way I experience it. So what exactly do I do? So it's during this time, and this is exactly why people don't do it, quite honestly, is we're engaging our deepest self. And the problem with that is that it has one word in it that is a trigger word for most evangelical Christians, and that is the self. Because the minute we hear that word, we assume that we are being selfish. And yet, the ground on which Jesus built the golden rule, everybody knows, right? Love your neighbor as yourself. The thing is that we don't anymore. We love our neighbor better than we love ourselves. And our loving ourselves has become a ceiling for how we go about loving our neighbor. Now, we don't see that. We think we can give and give and give and love our neighbor better than we take care of ourselves. And it'll be fine because that's what I'm called to do, right? Because I don't want to be selfish. But sooner or later, the flow runs out. I mean, I had a friend of mine once say, you know, you got a choice to make. Are you going to be a ditch or a reservoir? And to unpack that a little bit, a ditch, water flows in and water flows out. So our inflow of power and passion and purpose from the Holy Spirit and from God flows in and it flows out to other people in terms of what we do. The problem is that ditches run dry because if we're not fully connected to God, then we're running on the fumes and a trickle that we're kind of picking up on in these so-called disciplines, thinking that somehow they're going to fill us up when our soul is already dry and empty. The alternative is a reservoir, because a reservoir, water flows in, is collected, and the overflow of that reservoir is what blesses people and impacts people. And I have to take care of that reservoir and make sure it's clean and make sure that it's cared for and that the streams that are feeding it upstream are clear and feeding it with good water. But I have to take care of that reservoir in order to be able to bless other people. And that's where ministry comes in, ultimately. So a reservoir is seemingly an inexhaustible supply, but we would rather be a ditch because it's exciting. There's a lot of things that run through a ditch that do. Eventually, it runs dry, and then what? So ultimately, this whole thing, this whole journey, this whole stage of the journey is a self-examination. And ironically, if you are familiar at all with the 12 steps, there is a fearless moral inventory that is part of those steps. And that's exactly ultimately what we're talking about in this stage of the journey, is we have to embrace our fears and we have to identify what our quote-unquote demons are. Those patterns and beliefs and conclusions that we've made that show up time and time again whenever we're running out of gas or we're not taking care of ourselves or we're not paying attention, and they pop up and start chirping away at myself, how I see myself, not necessarily my self-image, but how I see myself in terms of my relationship with God, not how I see myself as myself. There's a difference. And so we have to clarify in this journey, we've got false images of God. In a lot of cases, we live out the very thing that Blaise Pascal said, you know, hundreds of years ago when he said, God made man in his own image and man returned the favor. And so we've made God in our image and we worship that God. And then we wonder why he can't come through or he's not big enough. It can't be, because it's limited by our terms rather than the God that is found in the pages of scriptures. So there's the other thing that has to be addressed here is healing emotional wounds, dealing with forgiveness, and dealing with broken relationships that we have. That's all part of this inward journey, because that's part of the landscape. Now, if you're familiar at all with Paul Young, who wrote the book The Shack, he actually makes a word picture of what Mac, the main character's soul, looks like, or what his heart looks like, and it's a garden. And to him, Mac, when he walks through it, he said, "This place is a mess." And the character that is embodying the Holy Spirit says, "Yeah, but it's a glorious mess." And that's oftentimes the split, I think, between our perspective on our growth and the landscape of our soul and God's perspective on it. I think he nailed it just right. So ultimately, I think it's during this time that we begin to be open to practicing very neglected spiritual disciplines, not the ones that are the typical ones, like a quiet time or prayer time or going to a Bible study or whatever that is. But we begin to rediscover or even discover some neglected spiritual disciplines that oftentimes are not talked about very much. The funny thing about it is they are mentioned time and time again in the pages of Scripture by Jesus doing them. And there are two things that he does: solitude and silence. And the thing that is so unnerving to us about silence in particular is that if we're able to finally detoxify from the life of noise that we live in, what we find is that God is waiting for us there. I had a good friend of mine. He's the voice of the Daily Audio Bible. Brian Harden is his name. And he came to a few of our retreats and participated with some of our students. And he made a comment to me that I'll never forget. And what he said was, he said, the one thing I have discovered from doing these retreats is that nobody ever told me that silence is inhabited. And I think it's a window into the world that we live in. We live in, what my old mentor used to say, we live in a God-saturated world. And God is there, and he's waiting. We just have to quiet down enough to do that. The other thing is to engage in solitude. And I don't mean isolation. I mean going away, which Jesus does a number of times through all the Gospels. This is mentioned, that he goes away to what? Spend time with his Father. To pray and to spend time with his Father. And solitude puts us in a physical position of silence, and then we have to find a spiritual and emotional sense of silence that we have to move toward in some way. It's easier when we do that in the physical realm, for sure. It's also during this time where people will engage or attend a spiritual retreat of some kind. The only caution I would give in that regard is looking for a spiritual retreat, oftentimes, is either a stage two or stage three kind of thing rather than a stage four thing, which is really a spiritual director being involved. And directors are not counselors. They're there to spectate on your journey and to offer their wisdom about what can help you with where you're at in your journey. It's not about psychological disruption or struggles or things like that. Is it part of the conversation? Yes, it is, because that also is part of our spiritual journey. But at the same time, they are sensitive to that. And so what we need in these retreats is to walk with what I call a soul friend or a soul companion or a spiritual director, somebody that, like I said before, has been down this journey before, knows what it's like, and comes back to give us some measure of encouragement along the way. So we're taking whatever steps are necessary to cultivate a spiritual life with Christ rather than an obedience/action-oriented life with Christ. So we're trying to reorient here so that instead of working from the outside in, we're trying to develop the inside so that in time it can be the inside out that is impacting us. So the other thing I'd mention is there's a certain level of a loss of certainty, which is very unnerving to most people. We can become very easily confused in our search for inner meaning and purpose, because it's up until this time, it's been very clear, and we've had markers along the way. Now we've walked into something that is very uncharted, because it's our own. It's not somebody else's map. It's our own, and we're having to map it ourselves. And so in a lot of cases, the pain we experience comes from a paradox. We look outside of ourselves to deal with inside things. And the inner control, if you will, brings about more confusion and pain. So now we've got this tension going on between I keep looking outside to correct inside problems, but I have all these inside things going on that's creating a hunger, which is increasing over time, for something solid, something knowable, something clear. And we oftentimes still try to create clarity when the uncertainty that we are experiencing actually invites us into a deeper relationship with God. And so the uncertainty is not bad, but we see it that way because we want to be able to control the outcomes. We want to be able to control the processes that goes into it. Why? So that I can do it right, which is a stage three way of thinking, rather than do it in trust and do it in relationship. And I may not know entirely where this is leading. So at this point, we're becoming pretty aware of this vague uneasiness. And if anything, it just creates a greater momentum to try to figure out what's going on in here. So the thing that we land on, which I think is important for the fourth stage here, is we realize that we're in a search for direction, not answers. And directing and being clear about where I'm heading. So the thing that we've come from, okay, is that we have been in the stage of productive living, and we learn things like obedience and innocence and belonging and being in the center. But what we find is they're no longer serving us anymore because we're outgrowing them. And we begin slowly to change kind of how we approach God, not with all that we have to do that we can give him, but who we are with him. And what we begin to find out is that to some degree, we find out that we've got God in a box. And at this stage, God is not who we thought God was. He's very different. He's outside of the realm of what we can understand. And again, that more uncertainty, right? And so God breaks out of the box. He no longer represents our own worn out and frightening other significant people in our lives. He's not those people, the people that may have hurt us in the past, or a parent, or the church, or any of the other images that are oftentimes evoked with him, because my experience with God is very different than your experience with God. That my experience with my father is different than your experience with your father. In our case, we have the same father, but we experience very different characteristics. And so God takes on a new, healing, personal image that expands our view of God's presence. And as much as we might desire it, it's disconcerting, because we would much prefer the safe, knowable, certain, non-working image of God than the unknowable, uncertain, but vastly powerful and vastly personal relationship with God. And so at the same time, these images of God in expanding our view of his presence personalize that presence of his in a very profound way. Suddenly, we are getting closer and closer to being able to say, Abba, Father, rather than the holy, omnipotent, omniscient God that he is. That does not deny that. But let me give you an example. It actually comes from a good while ago, it's the story of Carolyn Kennedy. And Carolyn was the daughter of John F. Kennedy, the president, and she was playing in the White House, which apparently the kids did during the time of the Kennedy presidency. And she's playing with a playmate in the White House, and she goes rolling into the Oval Office. And her friend pulls her back and says, wait, that's where the president is. And she says, it's fine, he's my dad. And see, that's the same thing that we deal with, I think, in our relationship with God. So our image of him is now being personalized to me as my Abba Father. And a good example, I'll give you a great example of someone that had God in a box, and that would be Jonah. Jonah had God in a box. Even though he still went to Nineveh, he still evangelized all those people in Nineveh, and they came to God, and they repented and came to God. He said, whoa, that's not the way this game works, God. Let me just inform you that you're here to take care of us, your chosen people, not these unchosen people. This is not part of the program. And so he had God in a box. And sometimes, and oftentimes we do that with God as well. Just the A plus B plus C approach rather than this is the program, God, get with it. Now, I'll be honest with you. I've had those words roll out of my mouth many times before because it's like, I'm doing what I thought I was supposed to do here, God, and none of it is working. And you don't seem to be all that concerned about keeping your end of the deal up. And so probably one of the most difficult parts of this stage in the journey lies in the sense that we gained from ourselves and others that we're losing our faith and being disloyal to the church or to the group or whatever it might be. And some people would be very concerned about that. And we might even be concerned about that. It's like, how can I possibly do this and still be a Christian even? And that is part of the conversation in our heads and other places for sure. But I think that's part of the most difficult part of this stage is we feel like we're refashioning it into something other than what everybody else has had, and therefore we're losing our faith, and therefore we're not as quote-unquote good of a Christian as we once were. Now, there are a couple of key places where we can get stuck, and one of them is never being satisfied, never landing on the truth as revealed in Scripture. And we always have another question to ask. We're never quite sure that we have enough information to commit to this process of restoration or healing. And so we'll always have this kind of lingering doubt that this is the right path or the real truth in it. And that's, you know, you might even see that pattern in yourself. As our tendency is I can't ever get enough information, and I keep looking for just a little bit more, because then if I have it, then I know exactly that I'm doing what? The right thing, right? Rather than the thing that draws me closer to God. So there's never being satisfied. That's one place we can get stuck. Being consumed by over-consumed by self-assessment. And so we're consumed with finding ourself, not with finding our faith or finding our relationship with God. So we want to just know things about ourselves that would make us better, more positive, more insightful, but which don't require us to give up our will and our control to God's hands. So if I know more, that's going to make me better, and I will be a better Christian rather than losing control and not knowing things. Because the reality is there are a lot about God, and I think we would all admit this, that is clothed in mystery. We would prefer trying to make as much known about God as possible so that we can be sure that we're doing the right thing rather than knowing the true God. And so we're really, there's a lot about this that we're just unwilling to experience the shadow side of ourselves. And it's through that, the shadow side of ourselves, the dark part of ourselves, if you will, that we rediscover God in a new way. And that God loves us as we are, not as we should be, because we're never going to be what we should be. And we have to figure out how to embrace the reality of that, is accepting ourselves as we are, not as we should be. Because then the self that we bring to God is the one that we have fully accepted. And that's not to say it's complete or all figured out or unflawed. Nope, that's none of that. It's bringing my whole self to God's presence. That's what this is really all about. So the temptation here is to want to answer the less difficult and the less personally confronting issues rather than pushing in on these dark, deeper places. I a lot of times I'll call them, we've got sections in our heart that we have cordoned off and said, keep out, or it's the no-go zone. And that could be behaviors, that could be experiences, it could be any number of things. And we will condemn that part and then act as if we're accepting all the other parts, but we still have a condemned part. And so we seek something that we can reason through instead of experience in some way, or we seek something we can feel instead of reasoning through. So it's one or the other. We have a tendency to lean one way or the other. And sometimes we end up reducing God to being the source of our personal growth rather than being related in a very powerful way to the God of the universe, who has made himself disconcertingly personal. So there's that. There's, you know, getting consumed with all of the self-assessment. We can get immobilized there very easily because of this kind of push-pull that we feel like going on in our souls. And it's easy to get caged in here. And our discomfort makes us long for the more friendly and familiar surroundings of stage one, which is a simple faith, stage two, which is to share the faith of other people, or stage three, and that is just working it all out. And so the reality is stage four is oftentimes a telltale place, because either people will go further in and further up, as Aslan says to the children when they have arrived in his country, further up and further in, or there are some people that say, no, I'm out, I'm done, and they completely fall off the map of this journey entirely. You know, the interesting thing about that, I don't know if you've ever read the Chronicles of Narnia, but at the very end, the last battle is really a remarkable cultural statement as well. But there is a group of dwarves in there that oftentimes I will highlight because they're called black dwarves, and they were traitors to Aslan and his effort to redeem Narnia. And the irony is this group of black dwarves are there when Aslan comes. And so they're in his country. They're in his country. They think, because of how darkly they are impacted by their reason and how they see things and everything, it has so blinded them that they don't even see that they're in Aslan's country. And Lucy, in watching this, gets very upset, and she says, Aslan, do something so they can see where they are. And these group of dwarves think they're in a barn in the dark. They don't see anything, and the imagery is just so rich. And Aslan says, I can't. Their blindness makes it impossible for me to help them. And so, and to prove his point, he pushes a goblet of wine in front of them, and they taste it, and they think it's the foul water that is part of the barn that they're in. And they're fighting over the foul water that is there. And that is a vivid picture, I think, of the kinds of choices we have along this journey and what it actually looks like. So the thing I would kind of end on here is, whereas formerly we have been head-focused and hands-focused, now we have become fully heart-focused. And three words that I'll leave you with in a quote. The three words are this: orthodoxy, which means right belief, okay? Orthopraxy, which means right practice. And what this stage in the journey does is it takes us into orthocardia, which is a right heart, a rightly related heart. And that's where it's taking us too. So the quote is this. It's from a guy by the name of Richard Foster. He wrote a book called The Celebration of Disciplines. I went through it when I was going through graduate school. And he makes this point, which I think drives home what I'm talking about here, is that he says this. He said, there is a desperate need today. And what that need is not for greater number of intelligent or gifted people, but for deep people. And I think that's exactly what journey or the stage in the journey, the inward journey, accomplishes, is it invites us into deepness in our relationship with God rather than what we can do or how we can do it or how well we can do it or anything like that. So there's a lot to it that goes into it that I think is worth paying attention to. By the time we get into this and farther into this particular part of the journey, we are more accepting of our brokenness because we're willing to let God use us in the way he chooses rather than how we choose. And that's the landscape, and that takes time. This is a stage, but this is the phase of the journey that takes time. It takes a lot of different experiences, and it seems like our eyes and what we see changes. We're able to see things that we wouldn't otherwise see. So that's a brief synopsis of what stage four in the journey, the inward journey, or what I call the journey to the center of your soul, looks like. And there's a lot in there. And if you have questions, feel free to send them to me on Instagram or put them up on the website. And we've got a comment box at the bottom of the front page of sgi-net.org. That's home for us. That's the SGI community. And you can post something there as a comment, and I'll be happy to answer it in whatever way I can. If you do hit our website, and again, that's sgi-net.org, sign up to be part of the community. We're not going to send you spam. We send out a newsletter about once every month or so, just to keep you updated with some of the dates and things that we're doing and retreats that are coming up and things like that. So that's a way to subscribe. There are a vast number of resources. Well, I shouldn't say vast. That's overstating it. There are some resources there, including my book, my two books, Grieving the Loss of Someone You Love, and also The Seasons of Our Grief. That's the newest book, came out in January. There are digital devotionals there. If you want to get some ideas about how to keep your relationships healthy and balanced and having good boundaries in them, these digital devotionals, it's $5 a month. It's a cost of a cheap latte, not an expensive one. That you can engage in. All of it supports all that we're doing at SGI. And so there is that. The other resource I mentioned earlier in the podcast was the brand new podcast coming up from Outpost Media. It's called Unscripted, The Collected Wisdom of Life, Living, and Sorrow. And it will generally come out on Wednesdays. Our podcast for The Outpost comes out on Mondays-ish. That's not real rigid. I am in the throes of still working through some of my own grief at losing a good friend. And so how I get these out and how quickly I get them out is a little variable at this point in time. So you can follow us on social media, three different places. Instagram at SGI_international, Facebook Ray.Mitch, and LinkedIn DrMitch, MITSCH. You can listen to this podcast on whatever platform you listen to. You can find it there. And if you know anybody, or if you would like to, it doesn't matter how much you give, but if you're willing to partner with us, we would be ever so grateful to continue to grow the scholarships that allow us to help people to go on a retreat if they want to engage in it, to allow us to give some of the merchandise out to people. All of that makes it possible. But running a nonprofit like this is not cheap. It's not free. And we need all the help we can get to support us. And so in whatever way you want to do that, we would be ever so grateful. All of your gifts are tax deductible. We are a 501c3 organization. And so you can support our silent retreats. You can support the mission of SGI. There's also merchandise on the website for SGI. There are window stickers. If you're into those, or water bottle stickers, you can get those for $5. And they have a phrase on them called esse quam videre. It means to be rather than seem. And so that's the rallying cry for a lot of what we're doing when we get our groups off the ground. But you can subscribe to the online community, and you can do that. If you'd rather, or you know somebody that would rather send a physical check, you can do that as well. Just simply make it out to SGI, and the address is P.O. Box 322, East Lake, Colorado, 80614. So I realize these episodes are very packed, and there's a lot to them. And so I very much appreciate the time you've taken to listen in and maybe take some notes, maybe take note of where you're at in your own journey. I hope that's helped you along the way. And so that is it for tonight. Thanks so much for joining me. And until I see you next time at this time, love ya. Later. Bye.